Okay, so if we were to ask most people what the ideal form of government is, at least according to the Torah, so we generally think of Malchus, we think of David, we think of Shlomo, we think of, and that was kind of when I put the title up, that's kind of what I thought this would be about. It's like, yeah, we have concepts of voting, we have concepts of majority within Torah, but yet, like, okay, but why is a king better? That's kind of what I thought this year would be. But it ended up being, we'll see how it molds together, how the idea of democracy and a kingdom, perhaps one might be preferable to the other. Maybe democracy might have more of a prominent role within Jewish tradition than you otherwise would have thought. Right. Okay. So I heard a quote a little while ago. Rabbi Pruzansky from Bnei Asher gave a shir, and I listened to his, and I emailed him. I said, "What was that quote exactly that he used?" It went as follows: right, a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves money from the public treasury. Right? So, which in a way speaks to the challenge that faces our government today, and it speaks to like the inefficiency that might be. Well, maybe that's why democracy might not be such a great idea, because the people plus control, perhaps too much control is being placed within the people. And Sam Sofer also didn't make the sheet. Sam Sofer makes the point that what is it that's up for a vote? So Sam Sofer in his commentary on that pasuk where it says Achrei Rabim Lahatos, right, the whole idea of the majority rules comes from the idea of judges, and the pasuk tells us in Parshas Mishpatim that when it comes to a court case, majority rules, Achrei Rabim Lahatos, we follow the majority. So Sam Sofer says, yes, that's wonderful, but that's only when there's a question. But if there's not a question, if it's clear which side is right, so then you wouldn't necessarily follow the majority. Now, the problem is, how do you figure out which side is right? But if the majority of people say, look, we're going to do a vote azar, if the majority of people say, we're going to do X, we're going to do Y, we're going to listen to the Meraglim, right? The Meraglim, in theory, right? The spies, when they came back from Israel, in theory, they were the majority. So why shouldn't majority rule? Now, Sam Sofer is pointing out, well, not necessarily. So those perhaps are the counts against majority. Then in a perfect system, we can't necessarily leave it up to the people. So the classic place to start would be the question of, well, what exactly is the mitzvah of the king? And we have a pasuk, which is the first source. We have a pasuk in the Torah, Kisavo el aras, Yishar Hashem lekachem nosein lach, when you come into the land, Hashem will give you, and you're going to live there, and you're going to say, we want a king, like all the other nations in the area. So, som tasim alecha melech, so you should have a king. I mean, that you're going to request a king, and it seems the implication of the pasuk is that, yeah, and that's a good idea. I mean, that's going to be one of the mitzvahs that you're going to have, that when you get into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to conquer the land, and you're going to then have a king. So the challenge is, we started with Malachim when we started our new Navi Shir here in Linwood, but the problem is the beginning of Perek of Shmuel. In Shmuel Aleph, so Shmuel Aleph opens up with Eli being in charge of the Jewish people, kind of the last of the Shoftim. Then Shmuel is in charge of the Jewish people for a couple of Parakim. And then the people come to Shmuel and say, you know, Shmuel, you've done a great job, but I think we're ready to move on to like the king. And that's where we put it. Vayiskap su kol ziknei Yisrael, and source where everybody came together. The ziknei Yisrael, vayvol Shmuel haramasa, and they came to Shmuel in Ramah. And they said to him, he said, you've gotten a little old, and your children aren't exactly like you. So now it's time, please give us a king that can judge us like all the other nations have a king that they can judge us. So Shmuel's response, Shmuel's response would be wonderful. Okay, that's exactly what the Torah said was going to happen, and we're going to follow through. So Shmuel responds by saying, no. Vayira hadavar ve'ine Shmuel, it was bad in his eyes, kasher amru tenau lanu melech shafteinu ve'ispalel Shmuel el Hashem. And Shmuel turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asks him, what am I supposed to do about this? So Shmuel did not find it to be good news, and the Pesukim continue that Shmuel kind of chastises the people and says, no good. Hashem tells Shmuel, I know you're probably not going to like this, but like we kind of have to do this. And the implication being that Hashem is not such a fan of it either, but when the people are making this demand, we kind of have to give in to this demand, whatever that means. It's very complicated, as we'll see. It's a very complicated issue. But we have the problem is the Torah seems to say this is something that he should do. It comes time to do it. Shmuel seems to have cold feet, And HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to pat Shmuel on the back and say, you're right to have cold feet, but we have to do it anyways. So what is that conflict? How do you resolve that conflict? So the Rambam, you can see the very beginning, Hilchos Melachim Perek Aleph. So the very last section of the Rambam in his Mishneh Torah is Hilchos Melachim. The very last section of that has to do with Mashiach, right? The last couple of prakim have to do with the Melech HaMashiach. But before you get to that, so the Rambam talks about the general laws of kings, and he starts off by saying Shalosh Mitzvos Nitzavi Yisrael B'Shas Tisas on the Aretz, that Bnei Yisrael had three mitzvos that they had to do, right? Limnos Lehem Melech. One was to choose a king. They had to get rid of Amalek. And they had to build the Beis HaMikdash. And that seems to be that the order that they went in, right? They appointed Shaul HaMelech in the beginning of Shmuel. Shaul then has the opportunity to wipe out Amalek, and he doesn't do it, right? That's the famous story where they tell Shaul, Al tehit tzadik harbe, right? Don't be so righteous, you shouldn't have let the king live, and he let the king live, and Shmuel got all upset, and Shmuel went and killed him, right? But the Medrash said that night he already had progeny, and so we still have Amalek. But at least the attempt was made to get rid of Amalek. And then finally, the last thing is, and you're going to build the Beis HaMikdash, so that's ultimately, right? David wasn't able to, and then finally, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash. So the Rambam then asks, where is it? So the Rambam, I skipped a little bit in Halacha Beis, but then at the end he says, Me'achar shehakamas melech mitzvah, lama lo ratza kadosh baruch hu. If that's the case, if it's a mitzvah, why didn't Hashem want? K'sheshalu melech mishmuel. Why is it that when they ask for a king from Shmuel, he says, Hashem didn't want it, right? It's not so clear from the psukim that Hashem didn't want it. I remember when I learned it the first time, I kind of read it, a possible reading as like Shmuel doesn't like him, Hashem is making Shmuel feel better. but most Rishonim do not, as I've described. I've become less and less infused with that pshat as I've seen that nobody else says that. So I'm not so comfortable going out with that. But either way, Kishashalu Melech Mishpat, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want it. So why? Lefisha shalu b'tarumos, because they asked like in a not a good way, in a spirit of complaint. Velo shalu l'kayim in the mitzvah. They weren't asking to do the mitzvah. And if they shekatsu b'shmuel hanavi, yishenemar ki lo atcha me'asu ki oti ma'asu. Right? Rather, they wanted to get rid of Shmuel, and that's what Hashem kind of said to him. It's not you, it's me. Hashem, right? George Costanza said that he came up with the "it's not you, it's me" argument. No, he was the first one to come up with the argument where he said, "It's not you, Shmuel, it's me." Meaning they weren't rejecting you, Shmuel, because they didn't like your personality. They're rejecting your rule. They're rejecting Torah. That's the implication that Hashem is giving. Right? They're rejecting me. What does the Rambam seem to be saying? If we were to ask for Rambam, so Rambam, what is the ideal? The Rambam would answer, well, the ideal is to have a melech, but the ideal is to have a melech when they ask for it in the appropriate way. And that's, I think, how most people deal with
this. So not the ideal is to have a navi.
That's what it seems like. You're supposed to graduate to a king. Right.
They said that Shmuel was getting old, but the truth is, if you look at the sources,
yeah,
he was pretty young. I don't even think he was 30 yet. And even in those days, he wasn't old.
So he wasn't even 30 yet.
Shmuel, looking at Gemara, Shmuel had died very young, right? Because when Shaul died, he also
right.
He was in his 30s when he died, I think. So it couldn't have been.
That's true.
Very old.
Right. So I think we would translate that as so old fashioned.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're saying. You're rejecting him. It wasn't really old.
Right. Okay. But I was saying it's not you personally. It's you. It's what you represent, and that's what's being rejected.
Maybe being a nubby was taxing, so he looks like
an excuse.
Right. Well, that's what the Rambam was saying. Right. That it was an excuse. There is an excuse. So, but ideally, they should be. It seems like the Rambam would say that a king is the way to go, and really, that's the way he describes Mashiach. Because also, that it's going to be a king, and that's the story. So the Ran, the Drushus HaRan, the Ran has, Baal Batana liked to listen to long Drushus, or at least 12 long Drushus, or 13, that were collected into the Sefer Drushus HaRan. It always been very difficult to understand. I'm not sure what was written down and what was said over, but it was difficult to at least read the book Drushus HaRan, but there is a beautiful Pirush that has come out. Well, now it's already been a while, but it's a very skinny book, but now it's become a very fat book, because there's a very nice commentary that goes along with it. So the Drusha Saran in the 11th Drusha, the Ran lived in Spain a while ago, after the Rambam. He definitely read the Rambam. He lived after that. So he deals with really the whole 11th Drusha is kind of dealing with this question, or a big part of the 11th Drusha is dealing with this question. And he starts off by saying, well, what are we supposed to do? Right? What is the ideal form of government? And he continues and says, "Habeini pashra kasav kahu." This is how we should understand things. Yadua hu ki amin ha'anoshi tzarech l'shofet sheyishvot bein pratav. Sheim lo kein ish esreihu chayim below. That everybody knows that it's the tendency of a person that they want to be able to have some kind of government. They want to have somebody that's going to be able to decipher it, to make the rules. And otherwise, everyone will devour each other, and the world, everything will be destroyed. And everybody wants the rule of law. Right, so that they'll have somebody that they'll get rid of the listim or the ganavim, right, and they'll be able to do things right. I mean, everybody wants somebody to kind of be in charge in order to be the referee, in order to run things. And the Jews want that also. The Jews need somebody to maintain law and order. Besides this, they need somebody else for another reason. And that person is, what's that person's role? Right? To maintain the Torah, to uphold the Torah. Right, not to raise up those that are chayiv malchus, but to punish those that are chayiv malchus. Take out, right, the parentheses is to raise up, and the brackets are to punish. But chayiv malchus, those obligated to malchus, right? We those chayiv lashes, we don't usually raise them up. We punish them. That's, anyways, so lahanish chayiv malchus v'chayiv misus beistin ha'over malchuki Torah. Right, we need somebody that's going to carry out the punishments. So meyos she'ein ba'osaveira hefsed yishu medine klav. So that keeping those, so that person is doing that aveira won't cause any more losses and won't benefit from it. Right, that from these two sides is really two different things. Right, so one is that they want to judge the person correctly, and the second thing is, well, we don't really necessarily care how well they're judged, but we just want to make sure that they're kind of taken care of and kind of out of our care. Okay, so the Ran is pointing that there's really two roles. One is to maintain rule and law and order, to make sure everything is running correctly. On the other hand, we want things being done correctly, meaning the objective correctness, which is the Torah. So, but he's saying that there's really two different roles here. So that those three dots represent about four paragraphs. Okay, they skip through a little bit, but he says Al-Dasi explains this question of the conflict between the mitzvah of the king and the request of the king in this way. He says Al-Dasi hukach sheheim ratzu sheikra mishpat pamesh bein adam lechaveri nimshach mitzara malchus. So the problem was that the people wanted everything to be judged by the government side. They wanted to remove the Torah role. They wanted to remove the idea that there's an objectivity that Torah grants us halachos, and they wanted to place all the power in the hand of the malchus. So that was the complaint that they went to with that was the problem that Shmuel had with it. Shmuel says, until this point, he goes on to say, until this point, everything, all of the roles of the government were within the hands of the Navi, right? The Navi or the Shofet, right? We had Sefer Shoftim. The Sefer Shoftim is all about the Shofet, who here A was a Tzaddik, B was a Talmud Chacham, was a Gadol Hador, was a Dayan, and also was the one who ran the government and ran the army and ran everything was able to be combined. So what the people were saying, not only do we want that separation of powers to exist, we want everything to go to the, we'll say, quote unquote, secular side of what's going to be running things, and we're going to leave out the Torah side. So the Ran now is presenting something that's very complex. I mean, as opposed to the Rambam, who is saying, well, everything, you know, why do we want a king? We want a king because the Torah says that we should have a king, and that's the way things should be run. The Ran is saying, no. The Ran is saying, we have many roles that we have to cover. Right, we have to make sure that the Torah is being taught. We have to make sure that there are schools. We have to make sure that judged cases are being judged appropriately, and we have to make sure that the garbage is picked up. And we have to make sure that the power is working, and we have to make sure the traffic lights are on and the police are right. All of those things have to be covered. So in theory, until that time, they're really all covered on the Navi side. Right, the people were so the ideal maybe is that we split it, that we have a chief rabbi, and we have a chief, right? And somehow the two of them are going to work together. The Ran is saying the people are going past that. The people are going beyond that to say, let's just take everything and put it in the hands of the government and Torah, you know, in the way of Torah matnei alech, and what, you know, whatever is going to be with Torah will be with Torah. So the Ran already says, you could read into the Ran doesn't say it explicitly, but it could be that it's not necessarily that the king is the way to go. It's just the king is the way that the Torah defined the separation of powers. But if we could separate the powers a different way, so maybe that is okay. So if you go, continue on, so the Ran is now 1400s, continue on to the Emek Dover. The Emek Dover, I'm sorry, is in Rashi script. The Emek Dover was the Netziv, Tzili Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, I believe passed away in 1895, something like that. Throughout the 1800s was the Rosh Hashiva of Volozhin, maybe later than that. Okay, maybe later than that. So he wrote many different things. Among them is, I think later than that, among them was a commentary on the Chumash. And there he writes, so Yud Zayin Yud Dalet is that pasuk, of the pasuk of, you know, when they come to you and they're going to say that we want a king. So, maybe about four lines down on the right side column, it says Ve'are Yadua B'Divrei Chazal the Mitzvah Limnos Samelach Ve'im Kein L'Mayik Siv Ve'Amarta. Right, so everybody he's asked the question in, you know, as opposed to raising the question from Sefer Shmuel, he raises the question internally. Right, if it's going to be a mitzvah, so why is it that the pasuk is strange and is phrased in a very strange way? It says when you come into the land, Hashem is going to give you, you're going to inherit it, and the people will say, we want a king, so then you're going to place upon them a king. I said, if it's a mitzvah to have a king, so it's a mitzvah to have a king, right? You don't say, well, when you come into the land, people are going to say, hey, you know, our doorways look kind of bare. Would you mean, could we maybe have something, can you maybe give us a mitzvah to put in our doorways? Right? The mitzvahs are mitzvahs. We don't generally say, wait for the people to demand the mitzvah before we impose upon them the mitzvah. So he says, Venera. Why? So Venera de Mishum de Han Hagas Hamedina Mishtane. Imisnaig al pi das melucha, o al pi das ha'am v'nivcharehem. It says it could be that different times will call for different things. Sometimes the time will call for a king, right? That we want to be run by a king, or sometimes it will be based on ha'am v'nivcharehem, the nation and those people that the nation chooses. V'yesh medina she'ena yechola lisbol das melucha. Right, as we go to the left column, there might be a country that won't be able to handle the rule of a king. V'yesh medina she'belo melech harehi kasfina b'li kavranit. I assume means a captain. Anybody want to confirm that? Okay. In some nations, that if you don't have a king, it will be like a ship without a captain.
Could be a helmsman.
Without a what?
Could be a helmsman, but I'm not sure.
Helmsman?
Yeah, the guy who's at the helm of the ship.
He's not a captain? He's
not.
I don't know. I don't know what this means.
All right. The davar is that if shar lasos apiacharas And this is not able to be resolved by just by putting out a mitzvah asei. It continues on, right? Whether you should have a king, whether you shouldn't have, whether you shouldn't have a king. So here, all of a sudden, you see, this is fascinating, right? Until I referred this year, I never came across this nitziv, right? That we always think, yeah, you have a king, and that's in theory what the Mashiach is going to be like. So he says, not necessarily. When the people demand a king, when that's what's going to fit that generation, that's when you should have a king. If it's not going to fit that generation, so then you should be looking for some kind of alternative form of government, which he's placing as the will of the people. Right? And now it's very, one can think about when the Nitziv lived throughout the 1800s and figure out if influenced his thought or not.
Yeah,
right? And it's always dangerous to make those kinds of implications, but it's certainly possible that he's looking at it and saying, you know, is there a way to change it? So what he does, what he doesn't go so far to say is that now the democracy has become a king. Right, that he didn't say. He said it could be so the times call for a king, and sometimes it calls for a democracy. So Rav Kook takes that final step. Rav Kook, writing again before the Medina, but at least expressing a longing for a Jewish run state, where he says, those people that agree to have the nation being run in this way, also a land like the Malchus of the Beis Hashmonai. Right, Beis Hashmonai are interesting because they kind of assumed powers of a king, even though they couldn't really halachically be a king, right? Because they were Kohanim. So Rabbi Gam Nisayim Pshita the Logid Gari Mirashe Golios Shebavavel. Right, that they would be no less off than those people that are in charge of Golos in Bavel. The Golos in Bavel had some kind of status of a kingdom, of being a king, the Rish Galusa. It's unclear what that was. So therefore we don't need the Pasuk to include the head of the Galus, Shem Daf, those had to come from Yehuda and Beis David, Kamavur Betosvos, Shamdi, Ramasal, Dehacha, B'Shem Yerushalmi, El Lahoros, rather, to teach us, Dafilu Begalus, Yeshlem Koach Shalamidah B'Makom Melech Yisrael, that even when they were in Bavel, they had some kind of status of a king of Yisrael. Aval, Kishem Mismane Manhig Ha'uma L'Chol Tzarcheha B'Signon Malchusi, right, but when you have appointed a ruler for all that you need in the way of a kingdom, al pidas haklal v'das beistin, according to the agreement of the klal of the people and the agreement of beistin, v'vaday omed hu b'makom hamelech, he stands in the place of the king, le'inyan mishvatei hamelucha hanogim l'anhagas haklal, with regards to the rule of the king as it's connected to the people. So Rav Kook seems to be saying, not only can you maybe put aside a king in favor of having a democratically elected leader, but that democratically elected leader could even possibly assume the role of a king. Right, which is beyond. Now not everybody says this. There's a whole stream, you know, the Rambam, this is all within the Ran's school, right? The Rambam would never agree to any of this, right? If you ask the Rambam, would say this is all crazy. The Rambam says, the Torah says you have to have a king. That's the end of the story, right? It's only because the Ran started his leap and saying, well, it's not necessarily a king, it's just making sure that all of our needs are taken care of, all the things that we need for Jewish society are taken care of. That's really what's important. It's not necessarily the need of a king. And then the next step of the Nitziv saying, you know, it could be that a king might not be as good as a democratically elected leader. And finally, Rav Kook, who, by the way, was very close with the Nitziv. He was a big Talmud of the Nitziv before he made Aliyah. The Nitziv was a big defender of Rav Kook. Rav Kook looked when he was in. Rav Kook learned in Volozhin, and he kind of like did his own thing. He grew his beard. He had payas. He learned 60 pages of Gemara a day. He like did his own thing, and he was really his own character. And the Nitziv defended him when he was in. You know, like people were like, "What's this guy around?" It was a little weird. The Nitziv was a big defender of him. So, I don't know if they discussed this, but that is that story.
So what are they
what is Rikku calling this type of?
He's calling Vaday Omid Hu B'Makom HaMelech, right? Alpi Das HaKlal V'Das Basin, something that's based on the people, and that, I'm not sure how he works out Das HaKlal V'Das Basin. I'm not sure what he means by that, but that is put forth by the power of the people. Vaday Omid Hu B'Makom HaMelech. They're standing in the place of the king. Okay, so that's in terms of the challenge of democracy versus a kingdom.
So, do we, I don't know, maybe I'm not understanding, but I appreciate the thoughts that the sources you've given just now are towards not having a king,
mm-hmm.
but is it a real fair leap to then go with a democracy? I mean, as opposed to...
Rav Kook thought so. He was probably looking, I don't say probably put words in his mouth, he was looking towards the founding of a state. Right? Rav Kook is the...
Sure, but...
And he was saying, how's this going to be? And, it's going to be... The state's going
to
be this
because
way.
Because the people are... It serves the people to have a type of executive or whatever that is, I guess, serves at their will. I mean, I'm trying...
Yeah, I mean, what do you need a king for? I mean,
what is the...
The Torah gives us mitzvah. What's the reason for the mitzvah? So the Ron said... I thought it was the reason for the... One could look at the king and say no. I mean, if we were giving a Rambam shir, one could look at it and say, no, you know why you need a king? Because you need someone to be domel HaKadosh Baruch. You need a figure that's going to look like Hashem, they're going to respect like Hashem, that's going to have different, he has different rules than anybody else, he could have more wives than anyone else, he could have more animals, you know, he could have a lot more, and that maybe that's important. I mean, that maybe is the value of having a king. So that's one way of, one can... You know, we could give a whole shiur like that and say how democracy is terrible because we all think that we're powerful and we lose an understanding that there's a God. And one can make that case. But the Ron is saying it's a functional thing. Right? You're going to go into Eretz Yisrael and not, you know, the mitzvah is not to have a king. The mitzvah is to make sure you're running your own government, right? And to make sure that somebody removes the snow when it snows. Right? That's the mitzvah. Right, so if that's the case, what's the best way of accomplishing that? So Rav Tzur says, well, maybe the best way is to have the people decide rather than there just being a king. Yeah.
Even if the people decide who's going to run the country, it may not be a democracy as we view it today.
Yeah.
Well, choose someone, he runs the country. That doesn't mean you have an election every 4 years. It doesn't mean you have a Congress. It doesn't mean anything.
No.
So it's a sort of...
No, I think what the Nitziv is doing is that he's opening the door to say, well, you know, figure out a different. If you could figure out a better system, figure out a better system. That's okay.
Or at least within your time.
Well, figure out a better system for your time.
For your time.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Right. So now comes the. Okay, so that's the first. I wanted to spell that out. Now, the next thing I wanted to cover is that even within the halachic system, there are some things that come up that do rely on the power of the people. This Gemara we have seen before in really a different context. I want to spell out the underlying line. We've seen this over the summer. We discussed this. At Tan Rabbanan, it was taught that when the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, Rabu Prushim B'Yisrael, right? There are many people who were Poresh who kind of stopped doing Shol Lechol Basim Shol Lishtos Yain. They wouldn't eat meat or drink wine. Nitfal Lahem Rabbi Yehoshua. So they came. Rabbi Yehoshua came in front and crossed them. Amar Lahem, Rabbi Yehoshua said to them, "Bnei Mifnei Ma Iatem Ochlim Basar Ve'Inatem Shosian. Why are you not eating meat or drinking wine?" So Amar Lahem, they said to him, "Well, of course we can't eat meat because that was used as a korbanos. Shem Imenu Makriv Al Gabim Mizbeach. V'Achshav Batel. We don't have it. Mishta Yain. How can we drink wine? Shem Minachsim Al Gabim Mizbeach. V'Achshav Batel. And we used to use that on the base of Mikdash, and now we can't, you know, now we can't have it. So how can we drink wine when we can't do the avodah in the base of Mikdash anymore?" So Rabbi Yeshua said to them, "Im Kain, if so, then you shouldn't eat any bread because you don't bring the korban mincha." And Efshar, right? So they said, "Fine, Efshar Peiros. Maybe we'll only eat fruit then." So you can't have fruit either. Peiros lo nechol shekvar batlu bikurim. Plus, you're not bringing bikurim anymore. So Efshar Beperus Acher, I'll eat other fruit. He says, well, you're going to have other problems. Mayim Lunishta, you can't drink water. Trikvar Batal Nisach HaMayim, because we used to have the Nisach HaMayim ceremony, you're not doing that anymore. So Shasku, so they were quiet. They didn't have an answer to that. So Amar Lehen, he said to them, Bini, Bo V'Omer Lachem, Shalol His Avil Kol Iker, Efshar. Right? To not mourn at all is impossible. Shekfar nigzera gezera. Because there's already the gezera was done, and we were responsible to mourn. Ulis havel yoser midai, but to mourn too much eifshar, we can't do either. Why? Shein gozrin gezera al tzibur elim kain rov tzibur yecholin lamud ba. Because we can't make gezeros on the people unless most of them will be able to keep it. There's a very strange pasuk. I looked up that you have these curses and you're going to keep on having more curses. It's a bit of a strange pasuk. I haven't figured out how exactly it fits. But rather, the Chacham give the whole list of things. One of them is when you paint your house, you should leave a spot of it open, right? The other one is when you eat your food, you should leave a spot of your plate. You shouldn't eat all your food. And then there's the smashing the glass at the wedding, right? So all of that is when you have something, you continue doing things, but leave some of it out. That was the approach that Rabbi Yeshua advocated. So, okay, but the thing we wanted to show is that this line, I mean, this shows up several times over the Gemara. She'in gozer gezer al tzibur elim kein rov tzibur yechon lamud. You can't make a gezer unless most of the people are actually able to keep it. So that is what do you mean? Why would it be impossible? Like, what does that mean? Is it unless most people are willing to keep it, right? That's really what we're looking for, right? That most people going to be able to keep what you're saying? We see that there are many gezeros that fell by the wayside. Pasakum, the idea of pasakum that we're never going to eat bread that was eaten that was baked by a non-Jew, right? So that. For much of it fell by the wayside, right? That the people realized that the people weren't able to. The Gemara records this: the people weren't able to keep up with it. They weren't able to maintain this idea, right? They're not very lo alechem levado yichya adam, right? People needed the bread, right? So it fell away, right? So this is a rule that is important to keep in mind. Right, am lo chashiva gezer. Right, and the Rashba adds the Rashbam who takes the place of Rashi in Maseches Bava Basra, and much of Maseches Bava Basra. He writes, Kolomar, what does it mean? Kolomar v'chol hakal kulo kiblu es hagezera, that the entire nation accepts the gezera. Umistamim lo ayu kulan yichon lamud ba. Most of them would be able to keep it. Lo ayu maskimin. They wouldn't really agree to it. Ruban kakulam. Am lo chashiva gezer. Therefore, it's not considered gezera. Elim kein rubu yichon. Unless most people would be able to keep it, right? Which adds in an important dimension that the Rabbanim, who are making these decisions, who's making the gezerah, they're not put up for a referendum, right? They're put up by the Rabbanim. However, the Rabbanim's power is really coming from the people. So I remember, I think my first summer, I gave this Torah Shabbat Peshim. I talked about this. I think people got a little nervous about that, but it's true. It's totally true. You know who. How do Rabbanim operate? They operate because they lo alechem levado yichya adam, right? They have to get paid, and people aren't going to pay them, so then they're going to lose all their power, right? So this is a very relevant sugya, not just with the technical halachos of gezeros, but in general, who is really the force behind the koach Rabbanim, but really is the strength of the people following it. I remember when I was at one of the Epstein rallies, right, in Brooklyn. So I bumped into somebody actually from from Hillcrest. I was like, what are you doing here? He said, what are you doing here? I said, well, she's from Philadelphia. What are you doing here? Oh, we just go to these. Like, they just go. You know, they feel it's a worthy cause to go and protest people who are holding their wives to be a guna. So they go. You know, it's a Sunday afternoon, so they just went. It was a couple of people from my neighborhood that were there. So in the middle, he whispered to me, he's like, the rabbis really have to figure out a way to solve this problem. This is ridiculous. So he has a point. He has a point, but part of the challenge is that there are ways of resolving it. The ways are communal pressure. So the communal pressure has to come from the community. It has to, there's a dual power that has to, you know, that has to come to the fore for this. Rav Moshe here, this is actually the same tshuva that we quoted last week, the tshuva about a different part of it, where he talks about the where he talked about the rent control laws, right? Do we have to keep the, if there are two Jews involved in a practice, do we have to keep the rent control laws? So they, so Rav Moshe, in the middle of that tshuva, says, well, how do we figure out what is the minhag hamakom? How do we figure out what the practice is? So he says, well, it's not enough to ask the rabbanim, right? They're, they might know, they might not know. It's not enough just to ask from Jews. You got to ask everybody. Right? Not just to ask learned people. Learned people are a little jaded because they you know, they see everything through Maseches Bava Kama, Bamzi, and Bamaser. And you have to find out what is the assumption. So the best people to ask for what the assumptions are, people are doing deals, are the people doing deals, right? The people on the street. So that's another demonstration, perhaps, of the democratization of halacha. That doesn't mean that we just throw out halacha just because people don't feel like doing it anymore, right? That's not part of our religion. But at least within the ways of some of the, like the, like the edges of Yiddishkeit, through like how far do gezeiros go, and how do exactly we understand the way it fits within society. So some of that has
to... Raspberries or not eat raspberries.
Eat raspberries or not eat raspberries.
Is it bugs?
Oh, so that's, I'm not sure I'd go there. That's actually Monday night's shir. The Shulchan Aruch shir will begin that discussion, perhaps. But that's a Metzius question, right? That's not necessarily there, but the question of, what do we, what are communal policies with regards to certain things, right? So that would be, that's subject to what the community requires. Okay, and one more. So then, one more topic we wanted to talk about is that there is a model for democracy that's found within the Yerushalmi, as mentioned within the Rishonim, and that is what we call the Zion Tuvei Ha'ir, right? The seven, there are seven elders of the city. The seven elders of the city were democratically elected people. Right, so the Talmud Yerushalmi talks about that these seven people. And you need to have seven people. So why do you need to have seven people? Like, where did that come from? So the Rashba has a response on it, where the Rashba wrote, "V'hamidua b'stam, kolomer k'shehamidu aleim hatzibur shiva parnasim." Right, when the tzibur puts it up, seven people to run things, stam lepakeach al iskei tzibur. Right, so you put them that they're going to be involved with iskei tzibur. Lefichach k'shehin shiva sheyesh laharim. Or yesh lahem reshus l'chol davar k'ilu asu kein kol b'nei ha'ir. They have permission to deal with things as if the whole nation, as if the whole city was making those decisions. So afa pisha lo amidu osam al davar zeh b'feirish. Even though we didn't actually elect them to say, you know, the price per can of garbage collection for the year should be 18 and not 15, right? We didn't vote on that issue per se, but by us putting them into their office, right, we're telling them we don't want anything to do with the price of how much it's going to cost per can of garbage to pick up for the year. You figure that out. That's going to be your job. It's not going to be our job. About pachus mishiva, but if there's less than seven, ain't kochen shava liyos kechol b'nei ha'ir achiyitlu reshus b'feirish b'nei ha'ir. Right, but if unless they have seven, they don't have permission. Meaning, our assumption was that when we elected them, is you're not going to be dealing with making these decisions yourself. You're going to be making these decisions with six other people around you, and hopefully, you'll be able to knock your heads together to come up with the sacredic choices. So you only have our permission to make these decisions when you have seven people present. If you don't have the seven people present, so then, sorry, you don't have our permission to make those decisions without that. So that's a pretty impressive view. Right, that's a pretty, in a way, we'll say, progressive way of thinking about things. Right, that we've appointed you to make those decisions on our behalf. And the Rush, who was the Rashba's contemporary, right, when the Rush moved to Spain from Germany, he stayed with the Rashba for a year and then moved to his own town. So they certainly had major correspondence. So he writes, he has the same idea. The second line, they have that highlighted word, shakal maskimin, hochem achar harov, v'ayichidim tzrichim l'kayim kol ma sheyeskim aleihem harabim. Right, the singular single people have to listen to what the majority rules. V'im lo kein, if that wasn't the case, le'om lo yeskimu hakal. Kal al Shum Davar. You would never get a consensus. You would never get everybody to agree to something. Especially if any Tom, Dick, and Harry can do whatever they want in order to be mevat what everybody agreed to. Therefore, that's why the Torah talks about the idea that the majority rules. I'm not sure what that means.
Maybe that was the case.
On the other question you asked me, and that's the rest of the shuva. Okay, but he's saying it's impossible. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to run a government. So that is surprising to me, perhaps surprising to some other people here, is the Torah maybe does lean in the democracy way. Certainly someone could lay out a path that democracy perhaps is an ideal, and perhaps may even will be an ideal form of government. At least we'll have some semblance of that going forward. Yes?
The seven pranasim or pranasas, they're elected, but is it an election for life, or do they, like, is there a transfer of power like we have, where you're elected for a term?
You have to look back and see. It's whatever people decide. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get people decide. We'll live by these rules, and we'll live by these rules. And whether there's term limits or not term limits, or 4 years or 6 years or 2 years or 3 years. Right? So all that has to be, it's all worked out. Yes?
One of the issues that we didn't discuss, but I think it sort of cries out, especially for Lenny Malachim, is that under the system of kings, it seems that a very small percentage of them are good. Most of them are bad.
Right.
And their children are even worse sometimes. And then they get overthrown by somebody who's even worse. And if you look at it, it seems like not a good form of government.
Yeah.
Just read through the history of it.
Yeah.
And so you wonder why there's so much support for kings and Allah and the Torah and all that.
The archaeologists, historians that we listen to in our CD, would maintain that if you had a good king, you can get a lot more done than with a democracy. So you can't get, the Library of Alexandria or the pyramids built or the Beis HaMikdash built unless you have a king who has absolute power who can make these things happen.
That's the mitzvah of the saying. Sometimes
you need one or something. Like one in ten.
Right. Yeah, really. I agree with you. He says one in ten.
One in ten are good.
Well, the other thing is that Israel was clearly not only by themselves. They saw that other nations had these king guys too, and so was part of this. What was the model that they had? Well, the model they had was to have a king.
Well,
what you got as far as the personnel that were doing it were.
We don't really see. Why? We learned Malachim, many of us here in that year.
Yeah.
We've learned it. And you don't really see, why were things so out of whack? Like, what was it that drove everybody? Was it just the power of the monarchy? I mean, you could maybe make that read, right? Yeravam, Rechavam, like they just, they couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it, was there something else at work? And I started reading Rabbi Sachs's book, and then I put it down, and then started reading it again, I think, two nights ago when there's nothing else to do.
by
candlelight. I actually read it on the porch outside in the middle of the hurricane. I started reading his chapter where he points out that Bnei Yisrael works together much better when they're separate. Whenever they were together, they cause separations. I mean, when the binding of the Jewish people is only Torah, and there's no real political connection, so then we can actually have a lot more shalom than when there's political issues also. When he points to the three major galluses of Bnei Yisrael, when they worked together and then went into gallus, they were all because of Machlokas. Yosef and his brothers, he starts with, and then the first base of Megdash, and the second base, the first base of Megdash with the two kings, which were for learning, and then although one could read as it's all about Azara, but you know there was definitely a lot of strife, and then the second base of Megdash was clearly because of Sinas Chinam. Right, so I'm not sure what his resolution is yet. We'll wait for the next black. No, hopefully we'll have time to before then to.
Are there still communities that run by the system with Parnas, like the Jewish community? Is that like a shard thing or?
Who are the other six?
Oh. All the members of Kehilat Lo Marian, right?
Right, and there are some. Actually, I know Rabbi Kenny Brander is, I don't know if he did it or finished it, and he's in theory working on a doctorate on the history of shuls, where he shared something that he worked a lot on the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue, and there it really was a key.
Yes, they have,
but it was also 400 years ago.
But they have people called Parnas still.
Right. Well, they still have. Now it's not the same way, but when they were functioning, like before the Revolutionary War, they were the only game in town, and it really was... you know, that was,
it was, a
it was the
of,
real deal.
Like, so it was like a group of seven who ran the community.
Yeah, I mean, today, well, we see, certainly throughout the Middle Ages, things ran that way. You know, the government went to the Jews and said, you know, we need this amount of soldiers, we need this amount of money, and we, you know, and whatever, and, you know, otherwise you could run your own show. And they did. You know, that's where these, this rash and this rush, that's my people there, that's where they're coming from. All right, so we'll call it.